Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall-style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Well, we're a week out of the holiday or so, and I just want to tell everybody that I kept my mouth shut during Thanksgiving. I mean, I ate as much as I could with my little pack of insulin nearby in case I overboard, but I didn't talk politics. And Betty looked at me and smiled like I was a nice little boy. You know, I did not stick it to the progressive nieces. I didn't say, ha ha, mega. I didn't even do my mega dance at the table. Should I get a gold star, Jeff Garland?
Yeah, John, I think your pro tip to surviving or having a peaceful Thanksgiving was texting all your friends all the crazy things you wanted to say, and or the stories that were driving you nuts and you wanted to keep you from erupting in madness at the dinner table. John, I mean, this is the year, you know, people in 2016, remember, people were like, oh my God, you know, Thanksgiving this year is going to be so crazy. And I, you know, oh, your uncle is not. It's the other way, right, John? I mean, I feel like the people on the left are going stupid crazy this time and making it, you know, the world is ending and it's the end of times. And
did Robert De Niro finally leave the country? I mean, I'm wondering, does anyone really give two figs,
I know,
as they say, about celebrities? Like,
oh yeah, I mean, my favorite part is that then they get on media and someone's like, oh, I thought you were, you know, how's your new home in Ireland going? They're like, no, I'm not really leaving. I was just saying that. Yeah, I said something crazy. Big deal. Yeah, I'm like, well, yeah, the internet. You know, it's the internet for you, where all things are said. I don't know, John. It's interesting. You sent me something. Oh, what was it? It was something from the coverage between the different.
Is it MSNBC? Like before they're sold to Elon Musk? Because I had a fantasy that, you know, when I was at dinner with my family, that I would not speak. I did not speak politics because I was dreaming about being at Thanksgiving dinner with a noted fly fisherman, lesbian, and broadcast host Rachel Maddow. And I would say to her, please pass the salt, Rachel. And how's Elon Musk doing? Did he buy your network yet? You know.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's interesting because everybody's now trying to like pick apart Trump. I mean, you sent me this thing in Maddow talking about how like Trump's been swearing more. You know, this is after the election and they're just before that. It was November 5th. So right there at the cusp of the election. And she's like, you know, Trump's is mind going. Is he becoming, you know, more belligerent? Does that mean that the cracks in the wall and what's going to happen next? And he, cause he's swearing more and he seems more angry or whatever. I was like, okay, fine. And she, and part of her excusing for it was that she said that he was getting older. So, you know, you ever notice you have grandmother or great grandmother swears a bunch or whatever, and it's just part of life. Like, okay, maybe, sure. If that's the truth, he's an older guy. That makes sense. I don't understand what we're talking about here. Like, we're micro dosing on, is Trump angry about what they're he's just, doing. Like
anything they can do, anything they can say.
Well, it's you know, you do, what is it? The Trump derangement syndrome is now, I think you were telling me, morphed into MAGA Freud or MAGA Freud.
It's for me. I'm enjoying it. You know,
but it doesn't make sense because it's almost like they're addicts, right? You know, they need a fix. They need to get their blood up. You know, it's like those people who go into driving into traffic just because they like yelling at other people and flipping them off. You know, they need that rush.
That's where progressives really stand. You know,
right?
And people didn't want it. People didn't. Can't stand the hypocrisy.
Well, I mean, that's certainly right. You know, the DEI Olympics is all show and there's no muster. And that's, you know, where we are. And it's people want to say this, you want to put the flag out, they want to put the sign out, whatever. But at the end of the day, they're like, oh, not my backyard. I'm not surprised by that. That's, you know, that's certainly the history of this country, us as a populace and a zeitgeist. You know, we're all want to be pushing at the, you know, in line behind the parade of progressivism to some point. You know, we're modern Americans. Americanism is that idea, you know. But you know, you can't all of a sudden you turn around, you're following a circus wagon. You're like, well, wait a minute, what happened here? The border thing, John, you know, I've always said this, and it drives me nuts, is that it's a charade too. It's the idea that it's in my whole lifetime, there's always been this talk and there's always been, oh, the border. And it always becomes some, you know, candidate says, I'm going to fix it. And they hire 30,000 people to roam the borders and detain people. And then it's like, oh, well, look, I fixed it. And then next president comes in, they spend another, hire another 30,000. It just keeps becoming this thing, this megalith. We could do this. Our country is capable of doing anything. We could set our mind to be like, hey, we need to secure our border and have a very robust way of getting people into the country legally. People want to come in and claim, you know, that things are terrible where they're coming from and we're the greatest country in the world and we're going to try to help. Sure. But we can do that. There's a process we can build. We could build a campus on the border and blow through thousands of people a day and have hearings. And then they can go back to where they came from if they don't qualify, or they can qualify and we make them part of our workforce and they become productive members of society. We could do this, but people like it to be this political thing. And that's what drives me nuts. We just choose not to.
Yeah, I choose not to go nuts anymore. Right. I mean, they have, here's what they're doing now with they're openly defying the federal authority,
right.
You know, saying we're going to fight you, Trump, or like.
Right. And supposedly it's about.
You were a producer. When a politician like Pritzker gets up and starts screaming at Trump, like, I'm going to follow this. How many other producers try to grab and book the guy for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes?
Pritzker? Oh, my God. He doesn't do it, though, unless it's CNN or MSNBC. He doesn't do any local media. When was the last time he did any of that stuff? Because he doesn't have to, because he doesn't care. I mean, here's a guy. Was a story just the other day that he made a big thing about how he bought Ken Griffin's condo in Chicago after Ken Griffin moved his, you know, firm Citadel to Florida. And a sign
I think
of,
I saw that she at Capos wrote that. Yeah.
Yeah. $20 million, $19 million, something like that. And right. I think our friend my friend, and I know, I think you may have reported on some of your housing. So I won't speak for you, John.
You can say who it was. Is that the guy who wrote about my sumptuous wooden floors?
Not at the Tribune. Dennis Rodkin. You know, he says he reported that out, that, you know, they don't have full numbers on this because it's not all public information. But by his estimate, if you take the horse ranch in Wisconsin, the horse ranch in Florida, the couple of homes at least in Chicago, and a condo or two, and you tally it all up for the Pritzkers, and they have almost like $100 million in home assets, not including an estate they have in the Bahamas that's supposedly off the books, which, well, how do you think that happened? So, you know, this is the guy who says, oh, woe is me. I came up from this terrible life and I know what it's like to have to work hard for everything and get shut up. Like that guy just needs to stop talking. Tell us you're running for president in 2028. Let us find the next governor, you know, just okay, move on. I mean, I have no respect for somebody who lies like that guy does. And people are going to say, oh, look at all the good things he's done for the state. All he did for the state so far is get the federal government to cough up you know, emergency funds, quote unquote. And then, and we're no better off than we were, you know, as we've seen across the board, housing prices in the state are for some reason way lower than the rest of the country. Why do we think that is? People are fleeing the country. Why do we think that is? Unemployment through the roof. Why do we think that is?
When the COVID money runs out.
It has, for the most part.
Yeah. Now they're screwed.
Right. And that's, and so this, and we're supposed to believe anything from these guys. And this, he's the front runner, right? I mean, unless, of course, you believe that an 81-year-old Hillary Clinton could run in 2028.
How about Gavin Newsom, man?
Oh, yeah. But maybe. I mean, he seems.
I've got greasy hair. I've got my hair so greasy.
But yeah. You don't think Hillary's got it, John? You know, you don't see her running one more time?
You know what I think Hillary has? She has a little house in the woods.
She's right.
Her house in the woods is up on giant chicken feet. And she walks up there with a babushka in the snow. And she says, turn around, little house, turn around. Because this personality is exactly the witch Baba Yaga. She is Baba Yaga in my mind.
I own, I don't know. I like Baba Yaga, by the way. Look it up. Don't show it to your kids unless you're really, really, really scared.
That's one thing wrong about fairy tales. People don't read those Russian fairy tales to their children because it's too violent and creepy. But that's what the nature of fairy tales.
All right.
You know, there is a Baba Yaga out there, so stay in your bleeping house. Don't
listen to your parents.
Listen to your parents, so the Baba Yaga will get you. Right, exactly.
Right. You know, it's funny, John. You can say bleeping house. It reminds me, we were talking a minute ago about, you know, the idea that Rachel Maddow was losing her mind over Trump swearing more and being more not readily offending people directly and not like parsing it or whatever. I mean, like, yeah, I don't care. You know, this, I've already been through the worst of this. I'm doing it again. And she took umbrage with that. Oh, he's swearing. Oh, my God. She ever watched her own network? Like everybody on her network, the anchors, the pundits, they all swear without swearing. They're always like GD, blah, blah, blah. Or can you effing believe that? Or like, what? Like you people are so hypocritical. And again, it all goes back to this side that they don't know what to do. You know, they've been shown for who they are.
They're losing. They're going to lose their network. No one's watching it. And you can't build a news organization or operation on the assumption that the people are stupid and we know better. Cause that's what the Chicago Tribune had done for what?
Well, I mean, look at, I mean, any media has kind of been that way historically. Right. And that's always,
I mean, who wants to, you know, you're trying to get ready for Christmas. You've got the kids to worry about in the house. You don't need lectures on like from two lefty hippies on, you must go to the Old Town School of Folk Music, pay us money so that you can sing Woody Guthrie songs. Who the bleep cares?
I'm not casting any aspersions on the Old Town folk groups, but I appreciate them. But I understand, and I know what you're saying, John. I mean, it's
Woody Guthrie songs. Come on, man.
John, all music is beautiful. Come on, not really. it's interesting. I mean, I don't know what they think comes next, right? I mean, we were talking about this with your brother. We talked about this with even the idea of at least we thought we used to fake it. You know, the papers could have a liberal pundit and a conservative pundit, and then quote unquote reporters, and they would at least try to be upfront about it, being like, hey. But now nobody trusts anybody in those medias because they've been shown that at the same time, they're also back dealing and trying to push you into believing certain things or buying certain things or what have you. You know, we turn to who we know and who we trust. We turn to a John Cass News. We turn to breakthrough ideas like Cheney Ives. I mean, Dan Prof's got stuff out there. So it's I think that's the revolution we're in, and I don't think they realize it yet. They don't see the writing on the wall that they're either going to have to completely rebrand themselves and, like, I don't know, start at grassroots and rebuild. I mean, they still have a robust part of the population who still believes everything they say and, you know, our left-wing media, mainstream.
I go to CWB Chicago for crime news
because
I know that they'll at least run a mugshot, which neither paper will run mugshot. You know, they're like, oh my God, we don't want to offend the guy who just used a cleaver to break an old lady's hip and steal all her money.
I know. And CWB, and that's why we've, you know, Tom Bevan, and we've talked with him, and now they've got some big plans, and how I think this is the time for them to strike and really blow up, because they're one of the few places that tries to play it fair and even and be say, hey, you know, we're not trying to pull at the strings and get you to think one way. We just want you to think and be curious. And that's the thing that drives me nuts and has disappeared, I think, from most reporters, most media, people who, you know, consider themselves as arbiters of truth, whatever that means.
Well, does it work out?
There's no intellectual curiosity, right? They read something, someone sends them something, and they say, well, I read it, and it's got J.B. Pritzker's office name on it, or it's got the mayor, you know, they just take it for what it is. Or they say, well, the EPA put out this thing, and a bunch of, you know, people, researchers said that this is true. Well, what's this other side of the story? Well, I mean, it's the EPA. You got to trust them. They're professionals. I mean, it's that mentality. It's this idea that we've had news via press release has been the core of most of the news around this country. So much so that they mock it. They don't even realize it. That's the thing that kills me. You ever watch John Oliver, John? My wife enjoys it. I enjoy it for it, the speed and the writing, and the jokes are very good, you know, for what they are. I get mad at some of their omissions of facts to bend to their worldview, but they always do this thing where they mock local news, where they take the same phrase that every news station uses about a high profile story, and then they mock it because all the news stations quote the press releases, or they use the rip and read off of an AP, you know, crawl. That's where we are. They don't even realize they're mocking themselves. They're realizing they're mocking the system that is feeding them all this crap that is just press release and you know, corporate pleasantries, and they take it as news. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've turned on AM radio in this city, and I hear a quote-unquote news story, and it's about, you know, Starbucks has announced their red cups are coming back and blah, blah, blah. That's not news. That's a press release you just run on air. It's in all aspects of life.
How about the press releases that WBBM radio have run for Kim Fox?
Right. I mean, that's the thing.
I mean, that's like, Kim Fox has long been cared about the poorest people, and she's the champion. I mean, that kind of tone. I don't want to hear it. It's a lie. Also, you know who benefits from all this? Like, look at Brandon Johnson now. I don't even know what is his
15%. 15% approval rating.
Yeah, are there any newspapers in this town?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's
are there any columnists to have fun with this?
Right. I know. He's talking about
15%.
This is a guy. I mean, let's pivot. You know, while we're here, let's take a moment to pay homage. You sent me a Tribune story, John, which I thought was kind of funny and ironic.
And then I read it.
Yeah. And that you sent it to me was even better. But of course I couldn't read it because I have to pay through a paywall, and I had to figure out a way.
Read it either. I can't.
My wife and I, you know, we often frequently send each other Tribune stories just from the headline because we can intuit the rest. But this is one of my favorite, and this is indicative. If people want to say, oh, what happened? You know, and of course this is the paper, you know, hat tip to them. They are covering this. So, you know, they're doing their job. Within bounds, you know, they're not outright saying that this is an insane situation, but the gist of what they're telling about is that Johnson's ex-spokesman, whatever, has been terminated after being found to have been alleged that he was possibly physically and sexually inappropriate, was xenophobic, said some racist or anti-Semitic things in company of people.
This is Johnson's friend.
Well, that's the thing, is he's a longtime buddy, and so he's in Johnson's.
Never heard about it.
Right. He's in his communications, right. And he's in his communications group, and he's in press, works in his press office. please see what we were just talking about, how everyone just takes in press release. So this guy was writing those things. This guy is sending things out to people saying, oh yeah, no, this is sugarcoating and telling. But the kicker here, John, because that happens, right? You know, you get elected, your best friend gets a job in the press office. That's politics. You don't like it, you know, find a different country. That's just unfortunately how it works.
Especially don't go to Chicago.
Well, yeah, exactly. If, you know, it's leave Illinois if that's what you want. But the kicker is that there was an investigation started, and this is all coming from the Tribune, that an investigation was started into these allegations, and then they were removed. But before they could elevate the stuff to the point where action was taken against him, the powers that be within mayor's office, his chief of staff, Christina, and I always screw this up, I think it's Pensione Zayas, was investigating it, and their response was to have, quote, peace circles and restorative justice.
Wait, this is real?
This is real.
I thought that was a joke.
No, that was her first instinct to correct the situation where a guy has been alleged to have touched somebody inappropriate, made racist comments, made sexual comments.
Peace circles.
At work. And in the, you know, we're not talking like, you know, this is the Department of Water or Sanitation, or this is the back room at the park district. We're talking the mayor's bleeping office. The, you know, well, let's have a peace circle and let's get everyone together and talk about feelings and maybe we can move past this as a group. And wrong answer. He gets fired. He gets no pension. He's off the books. He gets scorned and goes away. That's the right answer. But they're so far up their own butts on this stuff that they can't see how stupid they sound when they're like, this is how you, someone did a bad thing. Let's put our big arms around them and bring them around the fire. And hopefully next time they'll think twice about doing bad things. Like that's their mentality. It's just how foolish are you? How understanding of human nature do you have that you would believe that?
No, it's because he knows too much. He's been hanging around with Johnson so long. It's about knowledge and he knows where Johnson's been and the root of the panic attacks and so forth. And so they're not going to jeopardize that.
And then, well, I mean, he has clout. I mean, certainly. And so he's protected class. I mean, the Tribune goes on to report too, that he had supposedly told his own staffers that he was untouchable and he couldn't be fired. And that, you know, you threatening them with going to, you know, anybody about anything, you know, that he could do whatever the hell he wanted. That sounds like he's a jackass. I mean, jackasses get hired in jobs all the time. But it speaks volumes more about, like you were saying, this is the guy who's been around Johnson for a long time. This is a guy who Johnson chooses to surround himself with. And this is how he acts in a professional setting where he has, you know, he had all the power, he had all the keys, and he could have, you know, been a leader, could have done his job, could have earned his salary, but he didn't. And now they're like, oh, coddling him because he's his friend. And like you said, he probably knows he's going to get every benefit of the doubt. But when he's so egregious with it, there's nothing they can do. But the other response is, oh, poor guy. he's misunderstood. You know, if that's Delicious. How things are going, if that's how things are going, and the Tribune got wind of this, and this has been sniffed out, imagine all the other things that are going on that aren't being picked up on. Or if that's the mentality, you know, if I get in trouble for doing something, what are they going to do? They're going to put a peace circle. They're going to, you know, pat me on the backside maybe and send me on my way. You know, that's the mentality, right? If this is the guy, this is the top of the hill, and he can do whatever the heck he wants, and it's you know, months and months and months of allegations.
But what happened to the Tribune that was covering Michael Madigan and Me Too and having like conniptions, like, my God, he leaned on this woman in a meeting. You know, where's that same joie de vivre for the story?
All right, let's look at the headline. It comes down to that. Editors and the reporters at least have some sort of input. So we'll call it a collaborative effort, and it really tells the tale. The headline of the story is Mayor Brandon Johnson says he doesn't tolerate behavior that got his ex-spokesman terminated, but offers little else. Okay, the offers little else hints at some sort of scandal. Headline should have been, this is a softball down the middle of the plate. Should be, you know, front page. Johnson's buddy goes down in flames. Johnson tongue-tied.
We'd be writing columns every day on different aspects of it.
Right. It'd be me too up and down the street. And again, I have no tolerance for this thing. I think guys like that should have their faces plastered. I haven't seen this guy's face anywhere. His face should be plastered all over these stories. Don't hire this guy. This is how he acts and when he gets the keys to the castle. You know, but no, it's this, well, the mayor, you know, didn't really know he was like that, even though he's his longtime friend.
These are the same people. These are the George Soros journalists, okay? So if you're with them on their program, they're going to protect you and they're not going to say anything, or they're going to walk around it. They're going to walk on tiptoe around it.
I don't understand. You know, it would be, you know, there's animus between the media and the mayor, and that's the way it should be, because you help them keep them held accountable. But that doesn't exist. You know, for some reason, the media is in the city seems to be afraid of calling him out directly and being really hard on this mayor. Probably because, as you point out, you know, that he's a black mayor, and so it's easy for those looking in to call you a racist in that situation.
That story is a 2-week story.
Right.
The one question I would want to know, how long has he known about this? When I want to give TikTok, like month by month or week by week.
Right.
Here's another story, Jeff. Where go up to Pritzker at a news conference and say, what are you going to do about Johnson? What responsibilities do you have? He's the Democrat mayor of Chicago. You're the Democrat governor. What is your response? But no one wants to. Same thing with Tony Preckwinkle, who created him. But no one wants to, you know, you don't want to be uncool. These are the questions that John Cass would ask. I mean, I did ask that type of question. I'm not trying to beat my own breast here, but that's what you do as a reporter, as a columnist. You ask those questions publicly, and you know that people hate your guts because that's what they're going to do. But too bad.
Well, John, I think we've depressed everybody now.
Well, can we make up for it? Because I've heard a story that you've been reading some fascinating fiction. Is this true?
Yeah. So, yeah, John, I have been reading some interesting reading. I finished just before the election, which was fun because it's political and chaotic. Is The Iron Heel by Jack London of White Fang and
Call of the Wild.
Right. It's a really good book. I stumbled upon it because somebody had mentioned, I don't know what I was listening to, somebody had mentioned Jack London, and they were talking about Call of the Wild, and I was like, I remember reading it as a kid, I remember reading White Fang, and a couple other books, and I was like, you know, it just dawned on me that everything I ever read had like a dog or a wolf, some, you know, canine as a protagonist of sorts, and Jack London ever write anything that wasn't centered around dogs? Is that his thing?
What's this about?
Well, so this is, and so I came across The Iron Heel, which is not about dogs at all. And the first thing I learned about it is that according to one of George Orwell's biographers, The Iron Heel was kind of like the source material for 1984, which kind of blew my mind. I'm like, well, wait, what's that mean? And, you know, in 1984, obviously we talk, reference it here a ton. But it's a really good book. So the book was published in 1908. So you're written up into that point. And Jack London, the premise is, and that which kind of made it unique in its time, is it's the annotated, future discovered, annotated diary of the wife of this like socialist labor party revolutionist in the early 1900s in the United States, who winds up putting in motion a revolution that goes the wrong way. Really, he starts a couple of uprisings, and then the oligarchy, which in this world is, you know, just kind of corporatist elitist oligarchy, that pulls all the levers and controls everything, tamps it down, and then essentially has like an iron grip, an iron heel on global society. Because he, and it's, and then it's her memoir. So it's like, she, up until the point, the husband, you know, you don't know what happens, but you know, the husband disappears. She's living in all these moments, and it culminates in this labor riot in Chicago, which is kind of, you know, apropos, but right. It's really interesting because it's, you know, pre-World War One, obviously pre-World War Two, but London predicts a lot of the rise of consumerism and the rise of capitalism, because it's all written looking back on this as like a historical text to understand this time 800 years later, after the oligarchs had ruled for 300 years, and then there was a socialist uprising, and then humanity essentially evolved. We don't know much about present time, but we learn that humanity has kind of evolved where we've got machines and things that do all the labor for us, so nobody has to work, and like we're enlightened, apparently, it seems. They ridicule a lot of the things like insurance and like the stock market and speculation and a lot of these things that were kind of being developed in big senses around the country and around the world in the turn of the century then. And it's really good. It's interesting. I mean, it makes you think, you know, especially if you take it in the scope of, you know, this is historically accurate and it seemed future. You know, I used to tell people to soothsay a little bit about the World War One and World War Two.
It's great. I love dystopian fiction.
Right.
My favorites. And I never knew this book existed.
Yeah.
I've just gone to Literary Hub to read about it. It says, for the past decade, wait, let's see what he says about it. In one of the most prescient dystopian works ever written, the narrator describes how the party in government, having lost an election, declines to leave office. The incumbents refused to get out. It was very simple. They merely charged illegality in elections and wrapped up the whole situation in the interminable red tape of the law. The Democrats were powerless. The courts were in the hands of their enemies. But you know what? It wasn't the Democrats who were powerless. The Republicans were powerless.
Mm-hmm.
Donald John Trump came along. It's amazing.
Right. You know, so it has, and that's why writing it right up against the election was really something special, just to juxtapose everything that kind of, you know, put forth where we are. And like,
well, I have to read it. Yeah, that's more important than getting a flexible 8-inch boning knife from Amazon. I will read The Iron Heel and perhaps write about it, because I didn't know that. I like dog books, but, you know.
I also recommend, too, if anybody has a chance or doesn't know about Ranulph Fiennes, which is, he's this guy. I didn't know about him. I stumbled across him watching, I'm a nerd, but rewatching old Top Gear episodes of Top Gear, the car show from the UK that was very popular in the 2000s.
Right.
2000s. Yeah, with Jeremy Clarkson. And they talked, one of the guests on it back in the 2000s was Ralph Fiennes, after he was the first person to run 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents.
Jesus
Christ. And I know. And he was like, I think he was in his 60s when he did it. And he was like 6 months out from having a heart attack. The guy is ridiculous. I mean, you listen to the stories and the things he's done. He was like the second person to attempt, well, second person to do it. He'd attempted a couple times to cross the Antarctica alone with just a sledge. And he wound up, the first time he did it, he wound up getting frostbite and had like severed some of his fingers on himself because they were so badly frostbitten. And he was continuing and he was making good pace, but then he had wound up having kidney stones, and he continued for like 2 days with kidney stones trying to fight through it. And then he realized that he could like shred up his kidneys and die, or at very least not be healthy. So he called for a rescue, but this guy's insane. So he wrote this great book called The Elite, and it goes through history. It starts, 5,000 years ago and moves all the way up to the current day. And talking about these elite fighting forces, the Templar Knights, the Assassins, the Mongols, you've got the Spartans. I mean, it's all over the place, and I'm only about halfway through it, but it's really an interesting read. And it talks about the strategy and the changing of mechanics and the changing of technology and how beliefs. There's a great story about how the cat god was a cat god was used. They sent out all they painted this cat god on their shield, and they sent all the fighters out into the local areas, and they came back. They were supposed to catch cats, and so they gathered up 10,000 cats. So each fighter had a cat strapped to his chest and a cat paint god painted on his shield, and so they marched on the city walls, and as they come up to the wall, and the soldiers inside this fortress, all they hear is this cat horde coming at them, and just and they're like, what is happening? And they wouldn't dare shoot arrows, because if one of their arrows hit a picture of this cat god, they'd be, they'd have to, kill themselves in shame and whatever. And so they wound up fleeing, and they just marched right into the town and this village, this citadel, and took it with cats. So anyway, it's a really
the elite, book. The elite, the story of special forces from ancient Sparta to the War on Terror by Sir Ranulf Fiennes.
Yep. Yeah, he's the distant cousin of Ray Fiennes.
That's
okay. A great book. Yeah. So those are two. Those
never
are,
cease to amaze me.
Those are my two books to try. The one fiction, one nonfiction.
That's good. And I haven't written a book lately, so I've been pressed to write one, but
well,
I don't know if I have it in me.
I think we got at least a cookbook in you, John. I think we'll get that going. And then, of course,
let's talk about it over a sushi lunch soon.
Let's do it. Let's do it. And let's keep our eyes focused on johncastnews.com for that, because we've got some ideas percolating, and I think you're going to want to subscribe now to get in on the ground floor.
Well, thank you very much, because it's only $5 a month or $50 a year.
That's better than Netflix.
Discounted, and you're not going to see any Obama propaganda on my stuff. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody, to the Chicago Way podcast, Jeff Carlin and John Cass. I just want to shout out to a friend of ours named Chuck, who listens religiously. He's from St. Louis, and he loves the podcast. He loves everything about it. And Chuck, if it was later in the afternoon, I would raise a glass of brandy and toast you, sir. Thanks for listening, everybody, to the Chicago Way podcast, to Jeff Carlin, executive producer, John Cass News, and for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass. Did I screw this up?
Yeah. You did. But I think they know who I am, I hope. And if you don't, check out our, please do us a favor and go back. And if you can give all of our episodes 5 stars, if you're a fan, that helps. And leave a positive review. New reviews always help. And share it with your friends.
We'll see you again next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.